Welcome to Indie Author Answers, a podcast about the craft of writing and being an indie in the world of self-publishing. Each week, we'll read a chapter from an unpublished novel and critique it. To read along with the show, go to indieauthoranswers.com. To follow along from chapter one, go to jimheskett.com/part1. Or to get a recap of the first half of the story, go to jimheskett.com/recap. Now, let's get this mother started. So here's your host, Jim Heskett.
Hey, hey, family and friends, welcome to that Indie Author Answers show. I be Jim, you be you, so let's get down to business. Welcome to the show. I'm going to say lately I've been reading that book Room by, who's it by? Hold on, I'm going to pause so I can find out who it's by. Emma Donahue. Now, I know in real time that lasted like a tenth of a second, but it actually, I spent like 15 seconds looking it up. And that's the magic of podcasting, is that you didn't even know. Room by Emma Donahue, and that's who I thought it was by, but I didn't want to say it wrong and get angry emails from people. It's a really interesting book. I'm about halfway through it, and it's a really I would recommend it for writers. I don't know if you've seen the movie or not, but I have not seen the movie yet. I'll watch it after I finish the book. But it's a really interesting study in point of view, because I know I've been talking about that a lot on the show the last few weeks, because it's the story told from the point of view of a five-year-old. So there's a lot of really interesting word choices and grammatical things that feel realistic for a small child, and it's very different, and I like it. It's a good study in POV, and it's also a pretty good book. It starts off a little slow, but so far it's gotten really interesting, and maybe I'll write a review on it when I'm done. Anyway, so let's talk about us. How are you? I'm good. I hope you're well. Anyway, so let's do a little tip of the week, which we usually do before we get into our reading. And today I wanted to talk about the difference between chasing trendy genres and writing from your heart. And so if the question is, if you're saying to yourself, Jim, should I go out and write a book in a genre that I know is popular, or should I write from my heart? And the answer is yes. And let me expand on that a little bit. I was listening to Chris Fox on the Rocking Self-Publishing podcast recently. Chris Fox was the guest, and he was talking about this book that he'd written that's got a formula for how you can write a book that will sell by basically finding an underserved genre on Amazon, underserved, I'm not going to cut that out because that's raw. You hear me? I'm going to leave that screw up in. An underserved category, a subcategory on Amazon that has good selling books, but only a few at the top. And then basically says you write a book in that that fits those genre specifications, and then you publish it, and then you'll get visibility and you'll get sales because it's a genre people want to read, but there aren't enough books in it. And I think I've seen some of the reaction to that is kind of distasteful. People have a distasteful reaction to that because it's like, well, then you're just being a sellout. And I suppose it depends on how you look at it. And there was one salient point that Chris Fox made in the interview where he said, you know, it has to be a book you want to write. And I think that's the important thing here, that if you are just going out and writing books in genres that you don't give a shit about because you know they'll sell well, cough, cough, adult coloring books. If you're writing books in that genre and you have no interest in writing books in that genre, then you're a sellout. If you're chasing trendy genres just because they're trendy and not because you actually have an interest in writing books in that genre, then you're a fake and you're a sellout and we can't be friends. But but if you have, say, ideas for six projects and a few of them and they're in different genres and you're not sure which one you want to write next, it's not really being a sellout to choose the book that you think has the best market potential as your next project. Because, surprise, surprise, you can be an artist all the fuck you want, but if you don't sell any books, how are you going to put food on the table? So there has to be a balance. There has to be a balance between writing things because they'll sell and writing what you love. Ideally, you want to find that common ground where, well, what I really want to write is epic space opera, but epic space opera is not selling. Is there something else that you can write that you enjoy, that you could write to put food on the table, and then you can write your epic space opera in between drafts of the other thing? Is that selling out? I don't really think so. You might have a different opinion. If so, let me know. So I may have stirred the pot a little bit there with that, but whatever, that's fine. I think I tried to find the middle ground and be objective anyway, except for that thing about coloring books. But I don't know. I listened to this podcast, and the host of the podcast, she was like, yeah, I'm going to start writing an adult coloring book. And I was like, oh, man, really? Like, how can anyone really have loved adult coloring books? Like, it's only been a thing for the last 6 months, at least as of March 2016. Anyway, I'm going to stop ranting that. I'm going to make myself unpopular. Anyway, so today on the show, we're going to read a Miguel point of view chapter in The Problematic Virtue and critique it. It's 1,075 words. And the last time we saw Miguel, the last time we heard from Miguel was in the Brian chapter, where Brian had gotten mugged and he'd come home, and Miguel called him, and Brian was like, yeah, my phone was off, or I lost my phone, or whatever. And so Miguel said that he'd try to drive over, etc. So we're going to get a little bit of recap of that stuff, and I'll stop talking about it and start actually reading it. So here we go. This is part 4, chapter 16, Miguel. When Brian had proved unreachable by phone, Miguel drove over to his apartment and hopped the fence after the keypad wouldn't accept what he thought was the gate code. He didn't see Brian's or Alex's cars in the lot, but proceeded to their apartment. Knocked on the door, no answer. After speaking to Maria, Miguel tried to visit Brian but met stiff resistance. They told him Brian was resting, family visits only, and he had a hard time explaining to them that a giant Hispanic man with facial tattoos was family to a white guy. Maria might have been able to pull some strings, but she was indisposed in another wing of the hospital. He called Theo in the morning to explain the situation. Theo came over to talk about it. When Miguel finally did reach Brian on the phone, his concerns about Wiles spurred Miguel to action. Miguel decided to call Wiles and get some answers. Wiles answered on the first ring. Garcia, my old friend, what can I do for you today? I was just wondering if you talked to Brian lately, Miguel said. Theo gave him a strange look, but Miguel waved it off. I can't get him on his cell. Nope, I haven't seen him in a couple days. Think he might be out of town. What about your little blonde pet tweaker? Has he seen him? Theo sneered at the reference to Alex. I doubt it, Wiles said. That night, at Commerce City, Miguel said, you sent Brian there to scare him. A few beats ticked by, and then Wiles responded, yeah, so? What was the point of that? It's just business. It's like an initiation, I guess. I sometimes have to put the non-believers through it, Wiles said. That's not what you told me, Miguel said. You told me he was there delivering some stuff in my place. Yeah, well, I lied. I was just fucking with you. That night would have worked out, though, if you hadn't shown up with your Rambo bullshit shotgun blasting. Thanks for fucking up my shit by taking out Ray, by the way, Wiles said, his voice rich with sarcasm. I don't think I ever seriously expressed my gratitude for all that. I have to admit, I was pretty upset with you at first. I thought about putting some holes in you. Maybe I should have. But about Ray and them, it all came out okay. Turns out they weren't irreplaceable. I fumbled for a while, but your boy Connolly has proved once again that he can handle the load. Miguel didn't respond. Look, Garcia, it's been great catching up and all, but I'm a little busy right now. We'll continue this again real soon. Sure, Miguel said. Oh, by the way, Wiles said, say hi to Maria for me. They ended the phone conversation and Miguel looked to Theo. The last comment about Maria didn't sit well. What is it? Theo said. Something's about to happen and I'm not entirely sure what. I think I'm going to have to stop it. Can you wait here for a little bit? Miguel left Theo and walked to Maria's door. She told him to come in, and Miguel found her sitting in front of her vanity brushing her hair. Do you have to work today? He said. No, I have the next 2 days off. Why do you want to know? I think you should go to Lyman and visit Benita. I'll call her and tell her you're coming. Benita? I haven't seen her since, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. Maybe not since the reunion. I don't even know where she lives now. She's still in the same house, Miguel said. Please, Maria, do you trust me? Of course I trust you. Then I need you to do this for me. My car's in the shop until next week, she said. How am I supposed to get there? Miguel took the truck keys from his pocket and slid them across the vanity. Take my truck and go visit Benita. I'll call her and tell her that you're coming. Just for a day or two, or maybe a little bit longer. I have to do some things, and it's not safe for you to be here. You're scaring me, Maria said. Miguel came close to Maria. He dropped to one knee and put his hand on her shoulder. You don't need to be scared. I'm going to take care of everything. Just please do what I say. Are you in trouble? She said. If you're in trouble, I should stay here and help you. I want to help you. Miguel wished that he didn't have to talk her into going. Every word that came out of his mouth was a lie, but he reminded himself of the greater good. I'm not in any trouble. I didn't mean it when I said it's not safe for you. I just need to do some things, and it's better if you're not here. Please, Maria, I can't explain it anymore. Please just trust me. Her eyes darted over his face, searching for meaning or any kind of clue. Miguel remained silent, hoping his fear would not betray him. He wanted to send her on her way with some hope, if possible. Okay, she said. I just need to pack a bag. Miguel waited for her to finish packing, and then he ushered her out the door. She hugged him, her tiny body becoming enveloped in his massive frame. He kept his blank face steady during what Maria must have considered a routine goodbye. Miguel hoped that it was. As she drove away in his truck, the burden lifted from his shoulders. One liability he could mark off his list. He tried not to think about whether or not he'd ever see her again. Whatever happened to him, she would now be in a safe place. Miguel returned to the living room and texted Brian his warning. Theo sat still in his chair, a puzzled look on his face. Where'd she go? What was that all about? Theo, I have to tell you some things that I never told anybody, Miguel said. Theo had arrived at Miguel's house already half drunk, but it would have to do. I need to tell you the whole story. In case something happens to me, somebody should know the truth. Dun dun dun! Okay, that's a pretty good cliffhanger, even though it would have been better if he'd said, someone should know the truth about what happened at the bridge in Commerce City, because that is what Miguel is about to tell Theo the next time we see him in a couple chapters. But it's not quite clear the truth about what. And it's going to be, I know for those of you who are still trying to figure out what the plot twist is, it's going to be a couple weeks before we get to it. So unless you're listening to the, if you're listening in the real time, it's a couple weeks. If not, then it's just a couple episodes. Anyway, so what we have here is a chapter that's mostly dialogue, and I wouldn't normally like it, but there are some interesting bits of exposition and things that move the plot forward, even though I detected a couple of plot holes, which I'll talk about as we go along. But we start off with a recap of what Miguel was doing while Brian was doing his stuff in the last couple chapters. You know that, and it doesn't really, it's recap. But it looks like it's written like action, but it doesn't really, because we already know everything Miguel did, because Miguel told Brian over the phone all the stuff that he did, that he couldn't get in because of the gate code, he knocked on their door, he talked to Marie and found out where Brian was. So maybe if, like, I don't even remember now if the last chapter was a Brian chapter, if in story terms, if you were reading this all as one book, if that phone conversation with Brian happened 2 pages ago, then this recap isn't really necessary. But if it's like been 20 pages since Brian and Miguel had talked, then I think this recap is probably okay. So now Theo comes over, and this is plot hole number one, because if you remember maybe 10 or 12 chapters ago, Miguel was worried about Maria's safety because Wiles had made some veiled threats that he was going to hurt Maria. And Miguel's solution was to ask Theo to take care of Maria, to be her guardian angel. And so what's interesting here is that Theo comes over, but Miguel seems to have forgotten about that, because there's nowhere in here does he ask Theo to look out for his sister. I think in the next time we see Miguel, when he actually is going to have the conversation about what really happened at the bridge, I think he asks her to look out for her. But Miguel's solution, instead of saying, you know, Theo, I want you to guard my sister, make sure no one gets to her, he sends her out of town. So that's kind of a strange way that the plot veers here, and I'm not really sure why that happens, because it seems like then that whole little mini barely mentioned subplot about Theo and Maria being attracted to each other doesn't really seem to accomplish anything. So Theo comes over, and then the purpose that Theo serves here in the first part of the scene is to provide reactions while Miguel calls Wiles. And I think that's actually pretty decent, because instead what I could have done, because there's some things here, there's some subtext here where Miguel is saying things that are deliberately untrue. And what I could have done was include Miguel's inner monologue to explain this. But instead I have Theo reacting, because what happens, so Miguel has just talked to Brian recently. But when he calls Wiles, he says, "Have you seen Brian? I haven't talked to him lately," because he's trying to catch Wiles in a lie. And so when Miguel says, "I was wondering if you talked to Brian, I can't get him on his cell," and Theo gives him this strange look, that shows you, like, Theo is in this case, even though he's not the POV, he's not the point of view in this chapter, he provides sort of the reader, like, because the reader's going to be like, well, why is Miguel saying this? Didn't he just talk to Brian? So Theo functions as the reader in that respect. So then Miguel refers to Alex as the little blonde pet tweaker, and Theo sneers at this reference. And this is kind of interesting. This is sort of plot hole number two. Or it's not necessarily a plot hole, but it's a missed opportunity. Because if you remember, I think it was back in part three, Alex went to go sell some meth to Theo. And they didn't get along. They ended up in a fist fight. So it's a missed opportunity, because there is no resolution to that open loop. So Theo and Alex got in a fight, but there's no resolution to it. There's no way if Theo were a larger character, he could have had his own arc, or not even necessarily, he wouldn't have to be a larger character. Theo could have had his own arc, even as a very minor character, or he could have had some kind of resolution to this open can of worms about getting in a fight with Alex. At the time, I included that chapter where Alex and Theo got in a fight because I thought it was exciting, and also it was to demonstrate how Alex was getting more and more dangerous. But in that case, the mistake I made was that in that scene, Theo was basically just a prop. He wasn't a person, because a person would have more reaction to it. Now, I could have maybe explained why Theo never goes after Alex. Maybe Miguel asks him not to. But that's just a thread there that's not closed off, that doesn't go anywhere. So then they transfer to talking more about Commerce City. Or not transferred. There's like this strange transition where they're just talking about Brian. And then all of a sudden Miguel says, "That night at Commerce City, you sent Brian there to scare him." So it's really out of nowhere. And it's providing something. So Miguel had suspected this, I think, about why Brian was really there. Because if you remember, at the Commerce City Bridge, what happened was Brian showed up to deliver a bag to Ray, who is part of this business associate with Wiles. And instead of delivering the bag, Ray pulled a gun on Brian and scared the crap out of him. And then Miguel showed up and he got Brian... He made Ray let Brian leave. Fuck, I can't talk. Ray let Brian leave, and then Miguel was able to escape without getting shot. And then something happened that's been the big mystery of the novel, and that's what Miguel is going to reveal to Theo the next time we see them. So I don't know if Miguel has voiced this theory about why Wiles sent Brian to Commerce City, but he just says it. "That night at Commerce City, you sent Brian there to scare him." And Wiles admits to it. Wiles basically explains it like it was part of an initiation. And then we have this interesting line where Miguel says, "That's not what you told me. You told me he was there delivering some stuff in my place," because we know that there was a conversation that Miguel and Wiles had about what happened at the bridge, and that conversation happened off camera, because if I had included it, it would have created a lot of spoilers for the plot. And then something that's – so part of Miguel's personality – so something interesting happens here, because part of Miguel's personality is that he feels a lot of guilt. He feels a lot of shame, and he takes responsibility sometimes correctly, sometimes incorrectly, for things that have happened to other people. And so back in part two of the book, Miguel killed Ray because he was trying to protect people. And here, Wiles says that taking Ray out opened up the path for Brian to start selling for him. So Wiles is basically saying that the predicament that Brian is in is Miguel's fault. Now, what's interesting is that, knowing what we know about Miguel, he should have had more reaction to this. It would have been interesting plotting for Miguel to wrestle with this, to say, is Wiles telling the truth? Did the fact that I killed Ray lead indirectly or directly to Brian being in this terrible predicament right now? That would have been something that would have been in character for Miguel to wrestle with, but it's a total missed opportunity here, and that seems to be the theme of this chapter again. And so they end their phone conversation with Wiles giving another veiled threat about Maria. That's just kind of pointless. Pointless for the story, but what it does do is it gives Miguel the impetus, gives him the motivation to get Maria out of town, which I don't believe Maria going out of town has any effect on the plot for the rest of the book. But the fact that Miguel goes and he's telling his sister what she needs to hear so that she'll believe that she's got to get out of town, it makes Miguel seem more sympathetic, because remember, he's really the only likable character in this book, because he has a conscience, and even though he does bad things, he feels bad about that, and he values his sister more than he values himself. So he goes in and he has this conversation, and I think this conversation works pretty well. Take a drink. Because what there's some tension in here, because we know Miguel can't tell Maria the truth, and he's got to convince her to leave town. So this is a good example of how dialogue can be action, and you can have conflict in your dialogue. You can have conflict in it, and you can also advance the plot, even though it only advances the plot a little bit. Miguel, because you could say Miguel and Maria have opposing desires in this scene. So, like, from a strictly technical point of view, in this scene, Miguel's the protagonist, and Maria is the antagonist, because Miguel is saying Miguel wants Maria to leave town, and Maria doesn't want to leave town. Because antagonist doesn't necessarily mean bad guy. Protagonist is the person who wants something, and antagonist is the person who opposes that. So what we have here are little mini try-fail cycles, where Miguel's like, go visit Benita, and Maria's the failure is Maria says, I don't even know where she lives. I haven't seen her in 5 years. So he has to try something else. He has to say, okay, well, she's still in the same house. I'll let her know you're coming. So they have these little mini try-fail cycles, and Miguel's like, come on, just believe me, just get out of town. And Maria's not making it easy on him. Now, there's conflict here, but what you don't have is drummed up imaginary conflict where people are yelling at each other for no reason. There are legitimate reasons for Miguel and Maria to each want what they want in this scene. So I would call this legitimate conflict, and this is really the good part of this chapter, is this mini scene where Miguel is trying to convince Maria. And the final try-fail is where she says, my car's in the shop. How am I supposed to get there? And Miguel gives Maria his truck keys. Now, we could see, now in terms of try-fail cycles, when you have no and yes but. So Miguel ultimately wins in this scene because he convinces Maria to go out of town, but it's a yes but. And that yes, he convinced her to go out of town, but he had to give her his truck to do it. So now if you're thinking, well, how is Miguel going to swoop in and save the day when all the shit hits the fan, that makes things more complicated. And it's in the scene sequel format, at the end of the scene, you would call this the disaster because Miguel got what he wanted, but he had to sacrifice something. Now he doesn't have his truck. He doesn't have a way to get around. I think that that's solved later on by he just borrows Theo's truck, I think. I don't remember. We'll get to that in a couple chapters. But it's still, in terms of try-fail cycle, it's still a failure. It's a yes, but. Now, at the end of their conversation, after Maria says, "You're scaring me," we have what could be considered plot hole number two, and I want to read this to you and tell me if you can picture this. Miguel came close to Maria. He dropped to one knee and put his hand on her shoulder. Can you picture that? Does it feel kind of strange? So if someone's sitting in a chair in front of you, and you kneel in front of that person, and then you put your hand on that person's shoulder, you have to reach up, most likely. Now, I've said before that Miguel is tall and Maria is short, so it might be reasonable that he's not reaching up, he's just reaching out. But when you're envisioning that scene, doesn't it feel weird that he would drop to one knee and put his hand on his shoulder? It might be better if he were standing or he leaned over and put the hand on her shoulder, but that's just the kind of like blocking thing that a beta reader or an editor is going to help you find. So after he convinces her to go, we have the cliffhanger principle that like this chapter has a beginning, middle, and an end, and then after the end there's a teaser for the next thing. And so in terms of structuring, I like it. I like the way this chapter works. So the teaser at the end is where Miguel says, "I have to tell you some things that I never told anybody." And then there's this strange line where it says Theo had arrived at Miguel's house already half drunk, but it would have to do. It doesn't have anything to do with anything. I think I established earlier in the book that Theo drinks a lot, but it doesn't have any bearing on the plot. It's sort of like Alex's conspiracy theorist theories. It's just there for filler and doesn't accomplish anything. And then we end with Miguel saying someone should know the truth. And I already said before, it should be someone should know the truth about what happened at Commerce City, in Commerce City at the bridge. Because even though there was a mention of the bridge a couple pages ago, I'm not sure if the reader would remember exactly what the big plot twist that's supposed to be coming is coming. I'm sure you guys remember because I talk about it like every other week for the last year and change that I've been doing this show. Wow, it's hard to believe we're up to episode 64 and there's only like 6 or 7 chapters of the book left to read. But there's going to be more after that, I promise. And we'll get to that when the time comes. All good things to those who wait. For now, I believe that's all I have to say about this. We'll keep this episode relatively short. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for this week's episode. I know, but don't be sad, we will be back. Please, don't forget to rate and review the show on iTunes and Stitcher, or wherever else you happen to have found it. I mean, wherever it was, they're obviously got good taste, so please rate and review it anyway. Also, we'd like you to check out our blog at indieauthoranswers.com. You can also, I mean, if you're up for it and you've got time, pop on over to jimheskett.com and you can even sign up for the email list and you'll get free stuff. I mean, who doesn't like free stuff, right? Of course you do. So come on, you can do that as well. By the way, don't forget, you can also follow us on Twitter at IndieAnswers and you can like our Facebook page. And if you've still got time for that, then obviously you haven't got much time left for writing. And let's face it, that's what this is about in the end. So once you've done all that, why not go out there and write something? I mean, it's what Jim wants you to do. And if Jim wants you to do it, then you should really do it.